Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. Today, we're excited to welcome back Glenn Burrows. He's a family history expert, a tour guide, and owner of Norfolk Tours in England. And he's here every fourth Saturday to share what to see and do, sometimes in England. And sometimes it's like, hey, how do we dig up that family history? But today he's talking about the coastal walking paths in England. We've talked about Petter's Way before, which is an old Roman road that you can do, all kinds of places like going to Breckland and the forests out there, the Thetford Forest. I think I'm getting this right, Glenn. Yeah. But today we're going to the beach. So welcome back, Glenn. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, you've done really well there. You remembered all them places. Well done.
I know. Well, we've been talking for a few years, you know, but, yeah. And also there are certain places as you're talking, I'm like making, you know, these check marks. Okay. I want to go to Thetford. That's like a thing. I want to go in the Broads and I want to get on the little boat thing and go in the canals and all that. See, I got my list and of course, cheese scones.
Now,
I'd have to wish you and Diana a happy anniversary. Did you have scones? That's important to know.
We didn't have scones, but we had a really lovely cheese board and some for everybody else. We had cake as well. I don't eat cake, but I eat lots of cheese. So I had some lovely Stilton and some lovely applewood smoked cheese.
Oh, I love that. Ooh.
And some lovely, really tasty cheddar. Ooh. So that was lovely. Very nice.
Well, you'd like where we are right now. We're recording. We are up in northern Wisconsin, and they have cheese curds and cheese here.
Lovely stuff.
It's a land of cheese. In fact, one of the cats we're hanging out, his name is Cheddar.
he's
purring right around the corner for me. So he's agreeing with you. Cheddar is good, but he doesn't want you to eat him.
No.
But he might bite me. I don't know. No, he won't. He's sweet as could be. But these walking paths, what I think is so cool about this, you know, here in the States, whenever we're talking about walks, we have urban parks so where you can go through a forested area in a city, like Central Park in New York is a big
course.
Example. But there's just this really cool thing. I know a friend who did the Wales Coast path.
Yes.
Which is a really cool. She did Hadrian's Wall. She walked along Hadrian's Wall. Yep. She's done these. And then it seems very similar in that England, you're going through this absolute variety of landscapes when you walk, but you can get off the beach and go have, you know, go to the pub, like you're saying in your article. Everyone, Glenn's article is up on nationalparktraveling.com. But it's, so you can go to a village, you can go to a museum and learn more about the area you're you know, stepping through. So this is pretty cool. So let's start in your area. What's some of your favorite places for people to go on a walking holiday or just include it as part of their vacation?
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, the picture behind me is a town called Cromer. It's right, as you see, it's right on the coast. The picture is actually taken from the top of the church tower. And I went up there with some of my visitors who wanted to go up to the top of the church tower and have a look out to sea. So we climbed up this medieval church and we stood on the roof and took these beautiful pictures looking out over the coast. And the coast, you can actually see the coastal path going off in the distance.
So
Cromer is one of my favorite places. It's right on the north coast of Norfolk and it's sticking out into the North Sea, and actually there is nothing between Cromer and the North Pole. It's just right on the edge.
What?
And there, if you go due north, you hit the North Pole. There's nothing in between. So in the winter time it does get a bit chilly,
I would say.
But it's absolutely gorgeous. It's really bracing. You know, you walk along the beach and it's lovely. We often go to Cromer and to Wells, another lovely coastal resort, on New Year's Day. It's really lovely to, we say we blow away the cobwebs because it really is lovely and fresh. And it's really so beautiful, you know. And obviously you can see the coast is right there and there's the the town right next door to it. So you can pop into a pub and have fish and chips.
Oh, nice. You got to have some fuel. Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
So can you, like, as you as a tour guide with Norfolk Tours, if someone said, hey, I want to do like a walking adventure, and then, okay, then I want to go to London and maybe go to Stratford-on-Avon, right? You can incorporate this all together. But if someone wants to say, you know, go walking along a path for, because some of them are like 20 and 30 miles, you say,
oh, yes.
I want to do this. But what, I mean, you'll drive them, maybe take their luggage to a lodging and then say, off you go, I'll meet you here and take you to your next lodging, or, you know, how would that work for somebody?
Yeah, I mean, the coastal paths are really well signposted. So we could do exactly what you've just said. You know, we stay at a B&B, have breakfast, go off to the dropping off points. We'll say Cromer. I arrange that it's going to take 3 hours to walk to the next picking up point. I will drive my car to the next point. They would take the path around. All they'd need to take with them is their backpack with a camera and a bottle of water. And then I meet them, I pick them up. We go 3 or 4 miles inland and have lunch in a lovely little pub, take them somewhere else for the next 2 or 3 hours, walk, pick them up, take them to the B&B for the evening meal and the night of rest, you know, and then we go wherever else, you know. I mean, as I say in the article, you could actually have a walk at breakfast time in Norfolk and end up the day in Wales, because we're such a small country, as you can see, you know. Mm-hmm. We would fit England in Texas and there'd be plenty left over, you know.
I know, we're going to Texas next.
Exactly.
And it's big. I'm just saying, because it could take you 2 days to drive across that state, depending which way you're going.
Yeah, and I can drive right the way across from Norfolk, right the way across to Wales in probably 7 or 8 hours.
That's not bad.
And that's right across the country.
Wow. So that's like that's like not even, that's perfect, you know, for people, especially for people in England too. I mean, do you ever take people in England on like excursions?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've had quite a few people who on their own. So I've had sort of elderly ladies. I've had quite a few elderly ladies who.
Oh, Glenn.
Yeah. I've been married 40 years now. So, you know.
I know, 40 years. That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, I've had ladies who come to do some family history research, and obviously they're traveling on their own. They want to have someone they can trust. They want to know what bed and breakfast they're going to go into and what sort of places they're going to visit and feel safe and, you know, be accompanied so they can go into a pub. Because it still can be a bit daunting for ladies on their own to go into a pub or to go into a restaurant. And it's not nice eating on your own. So it's much nicer to have somebody with you. So that's what I've done. I've had quite a few single people who have just wanted someone to be with them and show them around.
And then their family history too. That's the other thing.
Oh yeah, that as well. But yeah, it's not, I mean, it's what I was sort of saying previously, you know, it is all about actually having somebody who you're with, you're on the journey with them. Because, you know, sometimes I've had people over for like 10 days. Well, at the end of the 10 days, we're like family, because
you know,
we've traveled together for so long and we get to know our own little idiosyncrasies, you know. Mm-hmm. And I take them to my favorite cheese scone places.
Well, that's the thing, right? Well, it's interesting because I was just having a conversation with Ben Berthelot from Lafayette, Louisiana. And this city is known as the happiest city in America.
Okay.
And it's in Louisiana. You know, we love Louisiana and the swamps, and they've got the Atchafalaya swamp. It's the biggest swamp, I believe, we have in this country. And so they've got a lot of outdoors, but it's very family oriented, a lot of sporting, a lot of food. But you're really immersed in the Cajun and Creole culture. So you get the French part of that in there.
Love that.
Yeah. And he says, it's about being immersive. So you could go to a French restaurant because they have so many French people there. And they'll say, you go sit at the table. And this is a table where a French family will go and have their dinner, or couple, Mm-hmm. And if you don't know anything about French or you want to learn French, you go join them for dinner at the table. Yeah. And then you get to speak French and meet with them. And he said, this is the tourism is going that way where people want that immersive experience. Exactly. So going with you, I can imagine like you're writing in your article about, oh, you can, you go on the shingle beach. I'm like, what? What's a I don't have shingles. No, I wouldn't know, you have to start. There's a line of how much research you want to do on Google.
Yes.
But if you're with someone and they can explain it to you and you're there, you will ingest that information and have a better understanding and appreciation than we're a magazine, so we have editorial like your articles, but yes, I'm just saying the experience is the where you really get it.
We all remember things that we did at primary school when we went out on an outing. Mm-hmm. I remember that when I was at primary school, we went for a walk up to our local woodland and had a look around the woods. Mm-hmm. I remember going to see the Cutty Sark in London. I'm talking about the mid 1960s, but I remember it because it was an experience, because it was something that I actually did. I actually felt it. I touched it. I smelt it, and that is what it's all about. It is all about actually experiencing something. And you're talking about the Creole and the French. When we were in Quebec, we were staying in bed and breakfasts. And, for me, it was lovely because I do speak French. Mm-hmm. And, to speak to these people in Canada in French and experiencing their life in Canada was just amazing because it was like being back in France again.
Yeah, because how else are you going to, how do you keep your language? I mean, I don't speak Afrikaans like I do, like until I talk to my friend Melissa. And then like my accent, and then I can't speak on the podcast at all because I can't pronounce anything because my brain goes, what country am I Afrikaans today? So I'm in South Africa. Am I in England? I'm in the States. I don't know. I can't pronounce anything. And people think I'm stupid on the podcast. I'm really not. My brain just doesn't know where I am. And every time I talk to her, I messed up for a full week. Like she does. She messes me up, but it's a good mess up. But that's the thing. If you don't get to use it, you lose it.
You do. Yeah. I mean, I worked in France when I was 19, and I came back having lived in France. So having just been French for the time. And when I came back, I'd even forgotten some English, would you believe? Because I had been totally French and I was dreaming in French. I was thinking in French,
Wow.
And it, now when I go to France, it takes me about half an hour to get back into the French head, but it is all about immersing yourself. So when people come on a tour with me, they're going to mix with the real local people. They're not going to mix with another load of tourists because, I don't go to places where there's hundreds and millions of tourists. We go to places, obviously, if they want to go to Stonehenge, we'll go to Stonehenge.
Yeah.
But, we normally go to places where they're the only foreign person in the room, so that all they're hearing is local people and they're hearing local people and they're sampling local life, which is what it's all about. And when you're walking along the coast and you pop into a local pub, that is what it's all about.
But and also the coast, I always feel like you're like, especially fishing villages, you're kind of with the salt of the earth, or should I say salt of the sea. You're with the people out there braving the elements.
Yes.
And it's just a like, oh yeah, this is not the frozen food section of the grocery store anymore.
No.
This is a real deal. And these are the people that go out and do it. And I think the coast, that there's something really cool and laid back about being, I don't care what country you're in. No, there's just this, even if it's rugged, like you've definitely like Cornwall, very rugged, right?
Oh, definitely.
It's like when we were up in Washington State, I was telling you about the parks there, reminded me of England. You had the Salish Sea, and there's a lot of English history there, but this intense wind whipping around you, but it was cold, so wear different clothes, but it's invigorating. And it's it's like, oh man, this is what it feels like to be alive. And so even that, you're still You're invigorated, but because you're at the coast, and I think it's the tidal water, I don't know what it is, but we're all born in water, in a water sac, so maybe it's a maternal thing, but something about being at the coast just still relaxes you, intrigues you. I love the ruggedness. Like, I think I've got Cornwall behind me. Those rugged cliffs, I adore them because there are birds that live inside those cliffs.
Yes, and I think that is the thing, because when you're walking along a coastal path, you're going to come across things that don't expect you to be walking there, because you're in their domain. You're not walking along a road, or you're not walking in a park. You're walking actually in nature. Mm-hmm. And that is what is the most amazing thing about walking on the coastal paths, is that you may not actually meet anybody else on your entire walk, because they are so in the middle of nowhere, because they're right on the edge of the country, obviously. So you're not necessarily going to meet many people when you're walking. And what you're going to experience are the birds, the animals that you're just going to come across around a corner, you know, and things like that. And if you do meet somebody, it's going to be someone else who's either interested in doing what you're doing, or they're going to be a local, they're going to be a fisherman, they're going to be, you know, somebody who works there. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the sound of the water is just amazing, especially on a pebble beach. When you hear water coming up on a pebble beach and then going out again, it's like a round of applause. It's absolutely amazing.
It's beautiful.
That sound is just amazing.
Where's the pebble beaches? Where do you go for that?
Well, we've got several pebble beaches in Norfolk. Okay. The picture that I sent to you that I said would make a really fantastic jigsaw puzzle is just near Great Yarmouth. Just around the corner from Great Yarmouth is a little place called Galston. And that is where this band of pebbles are. And the sea washing up on the pebbles and going out again, it's just like a round of applause where the pebbles roll. Amazing.
We get some areas like that in this country, but not as many. You get some national parks that almost have different colored pebbles in the water, not in this ocean, but it has to do with the minerals and that goes to Cornwall because of the mining. So I didn't even realize about the mining. Yeah, I know we talked about Flintstone, but now this is something different.
This is tin.
Tin. Oh, I thought it was shingle. Okay.
No. The shingle is actually on the beach. It's the stones that have been washed up. And the way the cliffs fall down, or the erosion of the sea, and then the movement of the sea backwards and forwards, just rolls the stones until they're round. So they roll backwards and forwards. And there's places like at Salhouse, there's another beach that is complete shingle. And then Galston, you've got a whole band of shingle in between the two lots of sand. But in Cornwall, they used to do tin mining, and you get all these tin mines on the cliff tops. They're just if I don't know whether you get Poldark on the television. There's a really good series set in 18th century Cornwall, and they were tin miners. There's lots and lots of mines in Cornwall, and you can visit them, which is the best thing, you know, to actually go and see industrial archaeology where it was, you know.
It's like these ruins, you know.
So it's not a made up thing, you know. It's not like a television studio. It's real industrial archaeology in situ. Fantastic.
And so that's the other thing we were talking about, going to museums. You were talking about the one area, I think it was Portsmouth. That's where you can go see. We were talking about the different historic ships that you can go see. So to me, that makes sense. You're walking along the path, and then you're thinking about the people actually setting off to see where you're walking historically. Yep. To set foot there is a whole different, you know, wow.
Yeah, I mean, if you go and visit, you know, the Victory or the Mary Rose or, you know, the Warrior, another big ship. If you're in Portsmouth, this is where a lot of these ships sail from, you know. Or if you're in Plymouth, you know, Plymouth Hoe is where a lot of Americans set off from, you know. But, you know, when you're actually on the coast, you can get more of a feel for how people lived. And when you see the sea, you know, see behind me, you know, this lovely picture of the sea mm-hmm. behind me, it looks gorgeous. It's not lovely when there's a force 9 gale blowing, you know, yeah. and then you've got to think, well, that is what people had to go out and work on.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. Even if and they're that's in the timeline.
When the lifeboatmen went out, that is what the sea was like when the lifeboatmen went out. You know, they were risking their lives and they gave their lives, you know.
What about that there was that film or TV series that was on BritBox that we saw, and I think I told you about, with a lady, and she was actually on our radio show a couple of years back for a different movie. And it was about the guy that faked his death going out into the ocean, and he was watching the ocean. And it's a true story, which is really freaky. And he really conned his own wife and conned everybody.
He did.
I got so mad at that guy. I was like, it was so, you know, it's you just like, oh, what a creep. But and he did. And he paddled his canoe out. And he ended up on this other little island area. And I'm like, I mean, it was a really cool way of seeing England, and also going to like the coastal areas where you can go get a Mr. Whippy. I had to bring him up. Spring has sprung, and everybody wants a Mr. Whippy.
Oh yeah, and we're actually going to the coast this next weekend with the family, and I bet that there'll be some ice cream, so there'll be some Mr. Whippies bought.
Oh, you better have one for Nancy and I. You know we want, and she wants you to have a crunchy bar too. That's important.
I won't have any, but the children will.
Oh, I know you. You see. But okay, well, you could have the cheddar and apple wrapped in bacon.
No, you're being silly now.
I know, I'm good at it. But that's the other part of it, is the charm of going to the seaside. And we're at that time of year where it's just, you know, and I like it in all seasons. I like the dark, dreary days when the mist comes in and all of mystical, you know. But then to have the sunny days, the sunny days where you can have a Mr. Whippy ice cream, everybody, by the way. Do you have Wimpies still?
We used to have Wimpy bars, but they're a bit passe now.
Oh, because I've seen a couple pop up around here, like in this country.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like the history. I was like, what's going on? Mr. Whippy and a Mr. Wimpy. Like, let's have some fun. But I remember as a kid in England going out on the coast, walking the coastline, and I think it was more up where we were, Southport area. Has it got a coast there? We were Southport, and then we were also lived in, is it Bridgeport? Ooh, I can't remember where we were.
Yeah, I think there is a coast. You're never far from the coast in England anyway.
Right. But I remember those big rocks and those pebbles, but loving it as a kid because you'd find these razor clams.
Yes.
Razor clam shells. And yes, I used to collect them. They were so delicate though. You know?
Yes, they are.
So we'd find those. And then I remember going to Blackpool. But does that become like I don't know. I remember getting rocking, walking down the pier, and it was so festive. And there was like, I remember a big toy store near there or something. I don't know.
I mean, the Blackpool is a really big, brash
commercial now, kind of
resort.
Thing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like this weekend, we're going to go out near Great Yarmouth, which is the Blackpool of East Anglia, really, you know, where you've got all the 2p machines, you know, the grabbers, you know.
But that's fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's great for children. But, you know, where we're going to be is only about 4 miles from Great Yarmouth, and you're in the countryside, you know.
Oh wow.
That's the interesting thing about Norfolk, and well, England in general, is that you've got the choice of so many different types of places, you know. So you've got the rugged coastline like in Cornwall, where you can walk for miles and not see anybody. Or you've got Cromer, like is behind me, which is a really lovely Victorian seaside resort with a pier. It's got a pier that goes out.
I love piers.
And then you've got Great Yarmouth, which is a sort of place that you don't really want to be for very long because it's very noisy.
It gets too much,
But it's a place to go if you want to have a Mr. Whippy, some fish and chips, and a go on the grabber to see if you can buy a toy, get a toy.
It's that, it's that seaside thing for kids, which it's very, that's what I was saying, Washington State, when we were there, we went to a Long Beach Peninsula. And of course it's cold, you know, and everything when we were there, but it was beautiful. And it was that quintessential little shop selling trinkets and, you know, all of that. And it just, it, you, it's nostalgic for adults because you remember doing that kind of stuff as a kid. And it is fun for a day after that. And you know, you want to do those carnival things where you can, you know, whack the little thing that pops up, you know.
Exactly.
And we all need to take out our frustrations somewhere. Just go whack it, you know, but it's fun to do that. But I think what's cool about this walking experience is that you can include that and then still go off and can you walk around the whole, I mean, obviously you've got Wales and everything in Scotland. Could you walk?
Yes.
Like the whole trail?
You can, you can walk around the entire country, and it depends on how much you, I mean, obviously if you're going along this, this route here, you're going in a relatively straight line. If you're going around on your coast, I can't really point to your coast because I don't know where it is. Your coast, it depends how you actually take the path. But according to the maps, the actual coastline's about 11,000 miles if you go into every little tiny nook and cranny. But if you're going actually on straight routes, it's only probably about 2,000 miles all the way around. So you can walk it. Obviously, it'd take you quite a while. But you can walk it, because it's not actually that far. You know, people do it. People do walk.
You just break it up. Well, it's like here, people do the Pacific Crest Trail from Canada to Mexico. They do the Appalachian Trail, which goes from like the top by Maine all the way down to Georgia. Through that, I mean, that's amazing. And you have to really time it well because of snow and all of that kind of weather. But a lot of people do it as like every summer. They go do a portion of it,
and just which is what you
could
do.
They finish it.
You could do that in England quite nicely, you know. To you know, do Norfolk in one bit, then you could go down sort of from Kent right the way across through sort of Bournemouth area, and then right the way along to the bottom of Cornwall.
See, I like the idea of being able to just go for like a nice walk that day, not overstress yourself. I think it's, you know, I'm not getting younger, so I'm kind of getting more relaxed about these things. You don't have to kill yourself on the trail. I like the idea of taking a nice wander, let's put it that way. Being able to spend time to look at the flowers and the birds and the water, because you've got seals, you've got all, you know, the sea life.
Yeah, we've got seals.
And I want to see that stuff.
For me, the nicest thing on a lot of these beaches are the little rock pools.
Yeah,
where,
that's it.
Where you're going to find, you're going to find a little pool. It's probably only going to be about 6 foot across, but it's full of life, you know, and it's just great just to have a look and see what you can see. But I mean, especially in Cornwall, there are a lot of relatively short walks, 3-4 miles.
Yeah,
you know, so perfect. You could do a couple of them a day, and you've got some really good exercise. You've got some really fantastic scenery, and also, you know, you've got some lovely food down in Cornwall, because you could have a cream tea, you know, scone and cream and jam, and that's all. That's all very very nice.
See, I like this. I like doing the exercise, then go feel up, go to a museum, understand. You know what I mean? So, and the weather you have is not. I mean, sometimes you get those Indian summers that get like really, really warm, but it doesn't last for 10 years. Your weather, you know, you can do like a, you know, in this country, depending on where you are, like you don't want to walk at midday because you'll, you know, it's really, really hot. Like if you're in the desert.
No, in England, it's generally speaking, I mean, last year was a little bit unusual, but normally in England, you could walk in the mornings and then walk in the afternoon, you know, and spend the middle of the day in a museum or just looking around a nice little town. You know, that is what it's all about. It's actually sampling the place where you are and seeing life as it is, rather than, you know, going from here to there to there to there. You know, you don't want to rush. You want to spend time. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like you want to be able to, like you said, go to the rock pools. We call them tide pools. And look at that and actually and soak it up. You don't want to sit there and go, okay, there's a tide pool, move on. Well, what's the point if you're not going to take a look and see if you've got an urchin in there or, you know, is there a fish? What is in there? You know, that's, to me, that's the excitement and going out there and then being able to go into town and check it out and see, oh, okay. That's fun. Exactly. I like this, Glenn. I want to do it. I want to go I want to go for a walk. We haven't walked for 2 weeks. We've been snowed in. We're both feeling antsy and it's not good for the belly. I start growing tires and that's not nice. It's not feeling good. So, you know, we need to get walking, but I think this is really great for people to realize the other side of an England vacation. And I think one thing too, you brought up before you go, I wanted to touch on this. You touched on these SSIs. So these are special scientific interest.
Sites of special scientific interest. So they're not necessarily parks as such, but they are an area that are preserved, i.e. people can't just do anything on them because they're preserved because of the wildlife that they get on them. And we've got a lot of places like that. We've also got a lot of bird reserves, RSPB reserves on the coast. Okay. So you get fantastic bird life, especially on the North Norfolk coast. Well, all the coast, but, you know, North Norfolk has got a lot of bird reserves around it. Mm-hmm. But you've got these SSSIs, which are protected. You know, they're not areas where you can just go and do what you like in them. So if you are a scientist and you want to do a specific study on a specific type of wildlife, then, you know, concentrate on one area. Mm. And, I've had this historically, you know, with people who have studied a particular thing in history. Uh-huh. But there are so many opportunities for people to do exactly the same sort of thing, looking at wildlife, you know, looking at flora, fauna, everything, you know.
Birds. But I think people that are interested in archaeology and geology, I think this is a really good way to get out there and to experience it from everything.
I mean, Cornwall and Devon especially are called the Jurassic Coast because of the number of fossils that people find there. So, you know, if you're interested in you know, dinosaurs, we actually found in Norfolk, we've found the earliest human footprints.
Right, that's some crazy
outside of Africa. They're actually human footprints from, you know.
Okay, but did they take their DNA? And did you go and see if your DNA matches?
No. Come on. They're fossilized footprints in the sand.
I know, but come on, they can take their DNA and then you can see if it matches.
I wish. We also had a mammoth, a whole mammoth in the cliffs. I've got a friend of mine. He is always finding fossils on the coast at Norfolk, you know, all over the place. You know, so there are so many things you can do that if you wanted to do something, if you've got a specific interest, then I can put together a tour for you. You know,
that's awesome.
That's what we do.
That's awesome. You know, they just found the biggest penguin fossil, like a penguin. They dug up a penguin. That is a giant penguin. Nancy got all excited about this. We talked about it on our Big Daily Blend podcast.
Right.
It is the size of Shaq O'Neal, the basketball player. A penguin. So you're looking at 8-9 foot? Like, I mean, he's a big boy. I mean, that's, you know, a big guy. I shouldn't say boy. I didn't mean it that way. Before everyone gets mad, I didn't mean it that way. You know, so, I mean, he is a huge guy to, you know, and so a penguin that big, like, I mean, that's the biggest nun I've ever seen.
So where did they find that?
I have to ask Nancy. I'll have to Google it and find, I can't remember from there, but they found it. I find that fascinating to have that big, like, but it makes sense though, because they're just, you know, there's certain animals that are so prehistoric, you know, and you look at birds. And it's a bird. So, I mean, that's pretty crazy when you think a penguin is a human.
Yeah. Like,
and I used to wear a penguin suit to raise funds for our Oceanarium in South Africa. I walked around in a giant penguin suit and raise money. Yeah, I know.
We need photographic evidence of that, please.
Actually, there's some of that. It's in our storage unit. We have evidence of that. Nancy was dressed as a seagull and I was a penguin, and we'd go around in Port Elizabeth because the town mascot is a penguin because we had penguins. Right.
Yeah. So, but I mean, emperor penguins are quite big anyway, aren't they?
It must be an emperor that was the big one, I think. Yeah. Like a human size, that's pretty big, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I think that's the cool thing, you know, and that's thing, you know, going to these places and understanding. And then when you hear these kinds of reports and you've actually walked where something like that has been found, it's like, dude, that is really cool. You know, and it's always changing. Like Nancy's a total, like, dinosaurs, anything like that, she geeks out. And so, like, she always talks about this on shows. And since she's, you know, not here, right, she will be back, everybody. She's not sick or anything. We're just working away on some expansions. But she always talks about how they found a hummingbird fossil, the latest hummingbird fossil, the oldest one they found in Germany. Now, you would think it'd be in South America, the Americas.
Tropics.
No, Germany. So whatever we always think and believe 100%, just science and archaeology are always changing. And I think that's exciting. And if it didn't, we wouldn't have things to make us better when we're sick.
No, quite. I mean, they're always finding fossils here for things that you'd never imagine living in England, you know, like alligators and rhinoceros and hippopotamus.
Really?
Yeah, we're finding, you know, fossils of those sorts of creatures up in England.
See, there's a huge argument here about our wild horses, and people call them feral horses, but they're not. Well, now I'm going to get emails again, but because we had the Spanish, and then the Indians had horses, they had ponies, and they said, oh, the Spanish brought them here. Well, the Indians were here first. Okay, so they have a whole National Park Service site, Hagerman fossils of horses, proving they were here. One of the first things, like, we had camels here, you know, camels come from America so far. And so people now are saying, no, these are feral horses, so kill them, adopt them off, take them off public land. It's a big mess that we've been fighting for years. And I just want to say, like, so they didn't just disappear off the face of the earth. Like, there's going to be, you know, and just because you don't kill him just over that. But anyway, I always want to save the horse and save the animals. But this is this whole big argument of, did the horse originate here? It's like, cattle don't come from here. Cattle come from Africa. Like, the cattle we have in this country do not come from here. Guernsey has their own Guernsey cows.
Yeah. But Guernsey, then again, cows. You see, we don't know how much of the planet was actually joined up anyway, do we? Because that all fits together. That all fits together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we all we know is what we know now.
Exactly.
So everybody who argues, I think, just stop it, because you don't know.
I mean, if we're going back to walking along the coast, you know, you're going to find rocks that have been there for millennia.
Shells too.
You got the fossils that are in the rocks, and while you're walking along, you know,
you can see like the worms and stuff like that are fossilized.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, it's cool.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
I need to go for a walk. I really do. I miss it. You know, we love our 1 hour walks. And I'm like, you know, last time I tried to walk in the snow, Glenn, my butt saw the ice like 3 times. And let me tell you, I went down and the snow was over my head.
Well, you need to have some snowshoes on then.
Well, apparently people have shoes in Wisconsin for these things, and apparently hiking boots that I thought would be fine, apparently not. Ooh. You know, so I learned it's okay. It's, you know,
tennis rackets.
Oh, listen, the dogs and the cats and Nancy all lined up at the window and watched. No joke. And then she's like, you need to go back out and do it again. Well, I'm like, I was trying to feed the birds and the squirrels, really, because that's who gets it all out here. But
do you have the black ones?
Yes, actually. And I don't see that many here like that. The black ones.
Oh, I love to see them in Canada. The black squirrels were lovely.
Yeah. You see, I haven't seen them so much in this country. But what I did see in South Carolina, where we were just a few weeks ago, a white albino squirrel, unless that's a specific breed. I don't know. Yeah. But I was walking a coonhound dog, which thought, oh, let's go play with the white squirrel. I'm like, no, let's not. Let's walk around the other way. And that was fun. But you know what? That's a good point. What about walking your dog on the beach? Is that legal?
It is in some areas. There are lots of areas, especially where the public are, where you can't have a dog.
Okay.
But yeah, lots of areas you can walk a dog. But in England, generally speaking, if your dog uses the beach instead of, you know, a toilet, then you clear it up.
Yeah, yeah, that's important.
In England, people have always cleared up their dog's mm-hmm. mess for a lot of years now.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, most of the wild beaches are fine. It's just the ones like the one behind me is a public beach where people, you know, go on. So dogs are not encouraged.
Well, you're a dog country. I mean, you guys love dogs. Everybody loves dogs in England. And I bring that up because, you know, as we travel and we do pet sitting, which is, you know, our way of sitting and working, but having fun with pets, walking dogs really gets you to see things in a different way than a human. Because they're sniffing things out that you would go, why are you sniffing that? Okay, yeah, another dog may have peed there or something. Isn't this pleasant? But they're scenting something like another animal that we may not have seen.
Yeah,
there's,
of course.
It's like another set of eyes of this investigative journey. And they love their walks because it's like this giant billboard. Like I always say, it's not a billboard, a bulletin board with all these messages. Yes, and it smells and everything. But it's telling them who, what, and where. But where they look and go, like not go to the, you know, where they check out, you know, what they look at, gets your eyes open.
Yes.
You know, if you pay attention to, I watch people walk their dogs with their cell phone and they're walking on a busy road. There's their dog doing stuff and they're walking with their cell phone and doing stuff on their phone. And I'm like, you're on a walk. You're going to walk into something, which is funny. And we've seen that. But like, don't you want to see what your dog is doing? Don't you have that communication? Are you going to walk into the street and walk into a car? So I like the coast thing where I think, come on, put your phones away unless you're taking pictures. Enjoy it and take a dog if you can. It's cool. Or a kid. Kids teach you too.
Oh, they do. The one thing I could never understand, especially when our son was little, he would run ahead of us, then come back again, then he'd run again, and then he'd come. And we were exhausted just thinking about how far he'd ran, but he just loved it. You know?
But this is good because then they go to bed at night. They go to sleep. Exactly. Like, you know, before we do podcasts, we know, let the dogs run, let them run. Yeah. And then we could do a podcast, you know, it's like, get the kids out, go play, run. And then, okay, go to bed.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about. Instead of telling your kids to go play in the traffic, tell them to go take a walk.
Much more sensible.
Yeah. Well, everyone, again, keep up with Glenn and contact him. If you're going to England, he'll work with you. And if you're doing family history, even just, you know, through emails, he'll work with you. So go to norfolk-tours.co.uk. His article is up on nationalparktraveling.com. He also has another cool article on there talking about the great outdoors in England and another one talking about all the different national parks. So if you're interested in the outdoors of England, that is where to go. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. We are here with Glenn every fourth Saturday. Well, listen, have a wonderful coastal vacation.
We will. Yeah. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, I do love to be by the seaside.
Oh, of course we do.